I got the heart of a warrior, the heart of a warrior.
Leaving ready delirious, super smart and super serious. Running the game like I was born gearless. Leave a guy up on the beat to leave him earless. Still I know that they still hear us. Only rap we make an appearance. So I got shot, let it out, remain tearless. Cause I'm careless, doing it for the man. Them in all bodies and the new eras. Young rack on muffin' cunt, tell me muffin'. Miss me with that huff and puffin'. You ain't ready to buck and get stuck here. You're just doing a lot of chucking. I'm just doing a lot of talking. Are you sick or something? Are you sick or something? You should think of bucking. Failure I don't think about. I'm blacked out and tear it out. It's amazing what you can achieve. Pull your finger
out. I will fight till I take my last breath.
Yeah.
I get the heart of a warrior. The heart of a warrior. I never back down.
See those guns? Hey, welcome to the kickoff of our brand new teaching series called Tenacious. Can you say that word with me? Tenacious. If you heard last week, we said that'd be a great name for a dog. Maybe some of you went out and named your dog that. Tenacious. So we're going to look over the next few weeks, how do we fight for what matters most? Have you ever noticed in our lives how often we fight over what matters least? Like we fight over some pretty petty stuff. At least in my home we do. Because I have a 9 and a 7-year-old that fight over anything that they can find to fight over. It's amazing to me. They'll fight over who gets the blue cup and the orange cup. They'll fight over who gets to sit in the far back of the minivan or the front, and then they realize that if they sat in the front that they could control the heat, so it switched who got to sit where, and they fight over anything that they can find to fight over. So we do a lot to try to mitigate their fights, to stop their fights. So we get them the same clothes, we give them the same food, we assign them seats for dinner. I mean, we do everything we can. So recently we had a family friend who got some placemats for the kids, Star Wars placemats. Thank you very much. So Yoda's on there, and Anakin, and Luke, and the whole 9 yards. So we got the placemats at the house, and they're the exact same placemat. And we're sitting down for dinner the other night, and they start fighting over the placemats. I'm like, they're the same placemat. And Kevin's like, no, he's my 9-year-old. No, I took off the sticker so that I would know which one's mine, so I never have to eat off the same placemat as my brother. I'm like, you're going to be eating off the floor pretty soon if you don't shape up. We fight over such insignificant things in our homes, at our places of work, oftentimes at churches. Some of the things that churches will split over will be stuff like the color of the carpet. Why is it that we as human beings have a tendency to fight so often over that which matters so little? I think at the core, it's because we have a lack of purpose. We have a lack of a vision of what our lives could become. And this is the idea of the series that we're rolling out here. Whenever we start fighting for what matters most, we will stop fighting for what matters least. Let me say it one more time. Whenever, for those of you over here, whenever we start fighting for what matters most, we will stop fighting over what matters least. See, so often the struggle for us, have you ever wondered why in all over the world, every country, there are people that fight with each other, there are wars that break out, all of human history, why is there so much fighting in the world? So often it's because we ignore the fight inside that needs to take place with our hearts. A lot of times I'll say to my boys, you're not fighting over a placemat. You're fighting because of what's on the inside of you. And what we want to look at with this series, if we shift the focus internally to fight for our character, to fight for what matters most, we're going to experience the kind of victory that God wants us to have in our lives. So the 4 weeks we have together, we're going to look this week, how do we fight for integrity? Next week, we're going to come back and we're going to talk about fighting for humility. The 3rd week, we're going to talk about the subject of faithfulness. So few people in our culture are faithful anymore. So we're going to talk about that. And then the 4th and final week, we're going to look at the subject of prayer. And we are going to journey through the life of Daniel from the Old Testament of the Bible. He's about 2/3 of the way through the Bible. I want to encourage you to go read that story over the next 4 weeks with us as a church. And let's journey together and let God use that story in our lives to help us fight for what matters most. And today we're going to talk about integrity. Here's a definition that I'd like for us to roll with today. Integrity is consistency of character in every context. Say it one more time. Integrity is consistency of character in every context. A couple years ago, Stacy and I took the plunge into the minivan world. Any other minivan folks here? Yep. All right. I got neutered too. So we took the plunge. And, you know, when you start getting excited about little hooks in the car for your wife's purse or electric door openers, you press a button, the back comes up, you know you know you're in a unique season of life. So we're doing all this research on Craigslist. Finally, we found a car, and it's up in Daly City. And so I drive up there. It's a Honda Odyssey, you know, the one of the best forms of minivan on the face of the planet. So I get up there, and it's a used car, just a couple years old, because as soon as it goes off the lot, it goes down a few thousand dollars. So I'm trying to negotiate. So I get up there, and I get there, and there's the door's all scratched up. And I'm like, what's this door? I want a perfect minivan. And the guy's, well, the price is about $2,000 below Kelley Blue Book value. I'm like, well, that's why I came, because it's below value. He's like, well, that's why it's below value, because of the door. And so I looked at it, walked around, and then guess what I did? I walked over to the hood, and I popped it up, and I looked at it. I closed it, because I don't know anything about cars. then I took it over to a mechanic, and he looked at it, and he's like, it's all good under the hood. It's the engine works. It works. It's perfect. It's just the door is banged up. So guess what I did? I negotiated them a little bit lower. I bought the car with cash. I drove down the road, took it to somebody who works on bodies of cars, got it fixed, and I was on the road. $2,000 of margin in the car from day one. Now, why did I tell you that? Because some of you are looking for minivans. That's why I told you. No, actually, I told you that because what's under the hood is what matters. You know, when you lift it up, if the engine works, you can make the car work. But if you lift it up, it doesn't matter how good it looks on the outside. If the stuff that's under the hood is not good, the car ain't going anywhere. And so many of us, when it comes to our lives, we're like these great cars on the outside. We got them waxed, we got them polished, we got the perfect color. But then when you get under the hood, there's not consistency of what you see on the outside. So we want to become the kind of people that when you put us in a place of work, when we go with our family, when we go to school, when we move from one context to the next, we're consistent with our character no matter where we are. We're the same person when nobody's watching that we are, when we're on a stage that we are, when we're driving down the road, when we're with our family. Now, let me stop for a second because I know somebody's like, oh, I'm not perfect. Yeah, me too. Welcome to humanity. But there's a difference between somebody who has integrity and who doesn't, because we all have mistakes. We all blow it. We're imperfect human beings. If you don't make mistakes, you think you're perfect, come back for week two. That's on humility. We got some stuff for you there. But for all of us, we make mistakes, and it's not that a person of integrity doesn't have brokenness. It's just that they're aware of the brokenness and they're not trying to hide it. They're not trying to be like, I got it all together all the time. We're just consistent with our character in every context. And Daniel, young teenage boy, 15 years old, when we see the story, we're going to see this young man who starts his life in a trajectory towards integrity, to be consistent under multiple kings in a culture that valued the opposite of what God wanted him to value. We're going to pick up the story of Daniel in Daniel chapter 1. I want to encourage you, if you have a Bible, to turn there. You can get to about verse number 5 or 6, and I want to lay the story in context of what's happening. Babylon is the setting of the book of Daniel. Babylon was unlike any city that had ever existed historically up until that point. It was lush, it was lavish, it was powerful. It was kind of like taking the indulgence of Vegas, combining it with the power of DC, with the impressiveness of New York City, with the skyline of Shanghai, with the money of Dubai, all combined in one city. It was big, it was powerful, and it was more than just a physical location. It was a mindset. It was a mindset that screamed, it's all about you. Indulge. Live your life to the max. You deserve it. Take it all in. It's only one life. YOLO from Babylon. It was this sense in which life is to be received by indulgence. And at the helm of leadership in Babylon is a guy by the name of Nebuchadnezzar. It's a cool name. Any pregnant ladies in the house? It's a great name. Because you know, whenever they call roll in class, ain't nobody else getting called when your kid gets called. Because that's Nebuchadnezzar. That's a sweet name. So we'll just call him King Nebi, okay? So King Nebi drips with arrogance. He's so arrogant that he has inscribed on the bricks in Babylon, I am Nebuchadnezzar the Great. So here's this city that lies about 60 miles southwest of modern-day Baghdad that is at the height of its greatness, that people flock to for a mindset and a lifestyle that is influencing all of the known world at this point. And then about 900 miles across the Arabian Desert sits a different city. It's a place called Jerusalem that's at the capital of a country known as Israel, which is supposed to be the place where the presence of God dwells. In this small little box inside of a tabernacle, it's the place where God's presence was to bless a nation, not so that they could just take, but so that they could receive and then bless all the other nations of the world. God wanted to bless a people so that he could bless the world. And they were to be different. They were to be people who followed the ways of God, that lived with integrity, that walked with honesty. And upon them was the blessing and the favor of God in such a way that distinguished them from all the other nations. But Israel turned her back on God, started worshiping foreign gods, rebelled against him. And God would raise up prophet after prophet after prophet after prophet saying, turn back, come back. If you go that way, it's not going to go well for you. If you keep down that path, there's going to be regret. There's going to be shame. And so finally, after warning, after warning, after warning, God says, okay, I'm going to do it. I'm going to get your heart back, and this one's going to hurt. So he sends over Babylon. He incites Nebuchadnezzar to march across the Arabian Desert to get the people of Israel and bring them back. So Nebi picks a guy by the name of Ashpenaz. Can we say that together? Ashpenaz, just to see if you're awake. One more time. Ashpenaz. And so Ashpenaz, who's the chief eunuch of the Babylonians. If you don't know what a eunuch is, just look it up on Google, but don't Google image it, okay? So here's the chief eunuch. Somebody's going to be distracted the rest of my message. Like, what's a eunuch? Eunuch, eunuch. Okay, so ask somebody else later. So the chief eunuch of the Babylonians marches across the Arabian Desert, and that's where we pick up in Daniel chapter 1. And the king gives very specific orders to Ashpenaz. Chief of his court officials, he gives the instruction to bring in some of the Israelites from the royal family and nobility. So I want us to imagine these young men that he's going to bring back. This is like noble families. It's like Prince Harry or Prince Henry. You know, it's like these British high up, intelligent. He says, in addition to that, young men without any physical defect, handsome. This is like Justin Bieber, so you get the picture. Or like Sam, the worship leader at North San Jose, good looking. And I got to take the chance whenever I can. So them showing aptitude for every kind of learning, well-informed, quick to understand, and qualified to serve in the king's palace. So this is like Mark Zuckerberg right here, intelligence. So you got Prince Harry meets Justin Bieber meets Mark Zuckerberg, all combined in a 15-year-old's body. These are young men who were distinguished based on education, based on lineage, based on looks. And so he says, I want you to go over and get some of these men, young boys, I should say, and bring them back over to Babylon. So they get them, they go over, they load them up on the camels, and they're... How many of you guys ever seen a camel drive or roll? It's like... It's different than a horse. You know, horses are like... Camel's like... 900 miles across the desert. Could you imagine that? That's a long time. Sometimes I think that the Bible, we just read it and it's like this old, ancient, archaic document. It's a living, breathing document. And when you can imagine what it was like, here are these young men that they're bringing across. They don't know what's going to happen when they get there. They don't know if they'll ever be able to FaceTime with their parents again. They don't know if they'll be able to snap shots of their meals and put it up on Instagram and Facebook. They don't know. They're going to be separated from their family for an indefinite period of time. So the story says that the king brings them over to Babylon, and when they get there, they don't know. Imagine the scene. You're rolling up into Babylon. They stroll up in. This is my addition to the story, okay? So just hang with me. None of it you can prove either direction. So I just imagine. They roll in, and there they go down the strip, right? And there's all these incredible hotels, beauty around. Some of the biggest buildings that had ever been built at that time in human history were in Babylon. So they're rolling up in town. Maybe even they passed in front of the prison, and they... Looking, you know, camels go so slow, so you're not sure if you're going or stopping. And you're like, are we going in there? Because the king could do it. The Babylonians hated the Israelites, so maybe we're going into the prison. But you get around, past the prison, and then they see the king's palace. And the gate swings wide open. And these young men go straight up into the king's palace. So odd. It's like, why would you bring them here, just leave them there or destroy Israel? But Nebuchadnezzar has a very intentional plan of what he's trying to accomplish with these young men. So they come in, and imagine the scene. They're there. They're waiting for that moment where the king is going to enter in. He walks into the room, and they're still not certain. Are they going to be thrown into prison? Are they going to hang out there? Are they going to be servants at the king's palace? And then the story gets even more interesting because it says he was to teach them the ways, the language and the literature of the Babylonians. And then the king assigned them a daily amount of food and wine from the king's table. So it's like the butler comes in. He's like, would you like some prime rib? Would you like a little bit of the T-bone steak? What do you want? Do you want this delicatessen? Do you want this delicatessen? Would you like a little bit of Merlot? Would you like Chardonnay? What do you like? I don't know if he talked like that, but I imagine. He's like, here's the butler. And doesn't this just seem odd to you? It's like, here you are. You're in captivity, and the king's butler is just like, woo, just take it, whatever you want. Just put stuff in your pockets. You don't know when you're coming. But it's daily amount of food from the king's table to these young 15-year-old boys. Now, okay, let's just stop for a second. What's a 15-year-old boy going to do in this instant? They're like, they're taking it down. They're stuffing it in pockets. This is like, mom and dad are nowhere to be found. They're 900 miles away. I'm going to live this thing up because I don't know when I'm going to see prime rib again. I don't know when I'm going to get to have mimosas for breakfast again and all the Canadian bacon that I could want. And here are these young men, and the story says, in their midst, among them, were the following four men: Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. And they're going to do something in addition to giving them food that is so easy to miss when you just read through the story. In fact, it says, in addition to this, the chief official gave them new names. Daniel, he gave the name Belteshazzar, And then to Hananiah, he gave the name Shadrach. And to Mishael, he gave the name Meshach. And to Azariah, he gave the name Abednego. Now, what is going on aside from the All Names Club here? What's happening in this story? See, there's something so significant that the king is doing to these young men. He's shifting their identity. So Daniel, whose name means God is my judge, he's taking his name and now he's giving him a name of his god, which Belteshazzar means that Bel, the god of the Babylonians, is going to protect me. He's trying to get them so indoctrinated into the ways of Babylon and indulging in their flesh and shifting their identity so that they're over here in Babylon and they forget who they are. They forget that they are chosen people of God, that he loves them and he called them his people. He wants them to forget, to not remember, and he's doing something so subtle yet so intentional. See, there's a difference between friendly captivity and oppressive captivity. It's kind of like if somebody were to come in the middle of one of our services. Now, we have an awesome security team here at South Bay. They are incredible. They're here to protect you in case anybody comes in that's dangerous. We love them. Thank you. Can we give our security team a hand? But let's just say something happens and like ninjas swoop in, right? Not the ninjas on the rooftop app on your phone, but ninjas come in and they come in and they start taking over and they put all, they're like, okay, if you follow Jesus this side of the room, you don't follow that side of the room, and those who really follow Jesus, it's going to be really clear, really quickly, who is committed to the ways of God. It's going to distinguish in an instant because it's oppressive captivity. The oppression and the darkness separates very quickly in that instance. But a friendly captivity is the exact opposite of that, because a friendly captivity lures them in to believe that everything's fine. Just eat a little bit more, just one more piece of chocolate. Just take another drink of that wine that he gave to you, one more mimosa, it's not that much. And then all of a sudden he gets them so far down the road 3 years later that they don't even remember their identity. It's a friendly captivity that they have to watch out for and that you and I have to be aware of, because there's an enemy around us whose whole goal is to do the exact same thing to you and to me that Nebuchadnezzar was doing to these four teenage boys. And Daniel, in the midst of this story, I want us to notice Daniel is different. Again, what would you do? I'm in. I'll take the, it might be different for me though, because I've been doing this, like, we do a January cleanse in my house, and so we eat like fruits and vegetables and grains all of January, and I do it because, you know, spiritual reasons, but also my wife is doing it, so I'm like, I'll do it too, and by the time I get to February 1st, which is this tomorrow, thank you, Jesus, I'm ready for a T-bone or a New York strip. I'm all over it. So, you know, it's funny. Do we have any vegetarians at South Bay? Just out of curiosity. No, I'm not going to shame you in front of, thank you very much, vegetarian over here. Now, I've decided after this fast, I'm going to be a carnitarian. because I've really started to feel this level of guilt about eating things that can't run for their lives. It's just like, I see the cucumber, I'm like, poor little cucumber. He can't do it. The carrot, he can't defend himself. So, anyways, I digress. But Daniel, he's different than me. But Daniel, will you say it with me? But Daniel. Okay, one more time. But Daniel resolved. He resolved not to defile himself with the royal food and wine, and he asked. Notice the wisdom and discretion of Daniel. He chooses in his heart to do something, but then he asks the chief official not to defile himself in this way. And right here in this moment, Daniel makes the most important decision I believe that he will make of his entire life. He resolves in his heart to live unto the ways of God. And I want us to see from this one point, how do we live a life of integrity? Why do some people choose integrity when others choose to live a life of deception? Why do some people go on a business trip and they put a towel in front of the TV so that they don't watch anything that will defile their hearts? Why do some students go out on Friday night and get to the party and immediately go home and some stay and have regrets? What is it that is different about a person with integrity, about a teenage boy, Daniel, 900 miles away from home when nobody's watching can make the choice? It is something that flows from deep within. And here's it. Here it is. A life of integrity flows from a heart of resolve. A life of integrity flows from a heart of resolve. We know in any area of life, if we want to improve, if we want to get in better shape, we resolve to get in better shape and we plan to get in better shape. And failure to plan is planning to fail, right? But oftentimes we don't take that same intentionality with our character. And Daniel, before he's given all these other temptations in Babylon throughout the course of his life, resolves as a teenage boy that he's going to live with integrity. And I want us to see from this story just three very simple resolutions that we can make in our personal lives this week around integrity. And the first resolution is this: it's to resolve to live from our true identity. Daniel, your new name is Belteshazzar. No, my name is Daniel. He writes the book of Daniel, it's believed by many historians, and all throughout the book of Daniel, does he refer to himself as Daniel or Belteshazzar? It's Daniel. Because he's saying, God is my judge. That's who I am. And not only is he my judge, but my commendation, my validation, my significance, and my worth all come from Yahweh, the God of Israel, the one who was, is, and is to come. And Daniel is going to let this identity fuel his understanding of himself so that he carries it into whatever context he goes into. I'm not sure if you know this, but I'm a Jeep guy. A couple years ago, I got a Jeep, felt the favor of God upon my life at that moment. And so I stepped into the Jeep club, and then I decided to deck my Jeep out with Batman gear, so it became the Bat Jeep, because I like Batman and Jeep, so I'm now the Bat Jeep guy. Anywhere you go, you see Batman on the back of the Jeep, you know it's my Jeep, which could be problems or good, depending if I'm consistent with character in every context. But here's the Bat Jeep, and we love to attach our identity and have labels in this world about ourselves. Have you ever noticed that? And we rank labels with other people. You do it, I do it. It's like with cars, right? You got the BMW and Lexus guys or gals, right? And a little bit, maybe a little bit or a lot of bit, depending if you have a BMW or you don't. But below that, no matter who you are, you know, below that is situated the Hondas, right? You got a plethora of Hondas, Accords, Civics, Odysseys, but they're below the BMW. And then one step below that, you got the Hyundais. You know those? They can't even get the letters right. It's like, that's one step below. So it just keeps going down. But then if you want to really quickly get back to the top, what do? You get a Tesla, right? And not only do you get a Tesla, but you get a jacket. You get some of those mesh pants with the Tesla emblem on it, and you get some Tesla underwear, and you wear them wherever you go so that everybody you encounter knows that you are a Tesla guy, right? I'm just going to get the jacket. Because you're like, Tesla guy's arrived. He's here. We do it, don't we? We do it with education. We do it with jobs. You know, sometimes the measuring, like, what school did you go to? Ever had that question? You're like in a conversation, like, what school did you go to? And you're like, well, what school did you go to? Well, I did my pre-college work at Notre Dame. I got my undergrad at Princeton. I got my grad MBA over at Harvard. And I got my PhD at MIT. So I am a Notre Dame, Princeton, Harvard, MIT guy, right? What school did you go to? Community college. Have you ever noticed how community college always comes with an explanation too, right? It's like, I'm going to be here for 2 years, and then I'm after doing the rest, and I'm going to go to UC Berkeley. Right? Hey, listen. When you stand before God, it's not going to be like Foothill College in this room, and everybody from Mission College goes here, and then there's a little bit further San Jose State, and then the Stanford guys are over here. When you stand before God, what he looks at is not the stuff on the outside. What he looks at is what's within you. There's no letters after your name that you need. There's no logo on that little card that you can get a little string out so you can get into the office. God's not looking at your hip to see is it a Google or Apple or Yahoo logo. God's looking at what is on the inside of you. And he died upon a cross for the sins of the world so that you do not have to live in captivity anymore. So that now you can live in such a way that before your behavior ever changes, he shifts your identity. And he sees you as a son and a daughter, and he's a good, good father that has an invitation into his presence so that you can take that card with you no matter where you go. You're at work and there's a lot of pressure right here to cheat on some numbers. You're at school and there are some teenagers that are trying to get you to conform to a way that you know you'll regret. And there is a tendency on our lives to try to change the label based upon the context that we're in versus letting the label that God gives to our lives drive the decisions that we make. So here's what I want you to do. I want you this week, when you are tempted to compromise, to use this phrase. Now, you don't have to say it out loud. But just in your heart, I want you to say, that is not who I am. That's not who I am. I know there's this pressure to cheat, but I am a man, I am a woman of honesty. I know that I can get away with looking at something online, but I live with honor and purity, and the man that my kids see in me, that's who I'm becoming. I'm becoming a man of integrity. I know that there's a lot of pressure. There's a lot of pressure all around me to compromise, but my identity is secure. And when you get to that place in your life, and it's a lot easier said than done, but when we live from there, we don't have anything to prove to anyone. And so Daniel takes that label. God's my judge in every context throughout his entire life. Consistency of character in every context. We're going to resolve to live from our true identity. Second one, we're going to resolve to reject compromise. Now, why does Daniel choose the food? Should have chosen the education or the name or choose something else. But Daniel chooses in the story to reject compromise specifically at the point of the food that he's putting into his mouth. Why? Because there is a correlation between physical indulgence and corruption of the soul. I'll say it one more time so it sinks in. There is a correlation between physical indulgement in Babylon. You deserve it. One more hit, one more night, just a little bit more. It's only this once. Nobody's going to notice. There's a correlation between physical indulgement and corruption of our soul. And we buy into a lie in our culture that the enemy is feeding to us, which is this, that if you compromise right here, it's going to get you where you want to go. If you'll cut corners, if you'll do it, if you'll take it, she'll like you, you'll go to the top quicker. If you just do it, just once, and it'll take you where you want to go. Now listen, if you go to funerals, if you talk to people in their 70s and 80s, there's nobody that you ever talk to, and they're like, man, I was on that business trip, and I just wish I'd slept with one more woman I didn't know that night. The greatest regrets that we have in our life flow out of those moments where we compromise. In 1 Peter chapter 5, 8, it says, your enemy, the devil, roars around like a lion so he can give cat food to kittens. No, it says so that he can destroy you. His whole goal for your life and for my life is to destroy us. So he makes it look good on the front end all the way back to Genesis 1. With the fruit that was pleasing to the eye. He makes it look good on the front end to get you in, and once you're hooked, it's destruction. When your good, good father, His ways oftentimes are much more difficult to choose in the moment, but they lead to lasting pleasure, lasting joy, and fulfillment. And sometimes the point of compromise seems so small, so insignificant in the moment. I wonder where you're compromising today. I wonder, what is that choice? What is that hard attitude that you've been hanging on to? And God is saying, if you keep going. Listen, it's not out of condemnation and judgment. God's warnings are always out of love for you. They're always out of His heart for you to do well and experience His presence. So the good things that God has for you in your life are going to lead to pleasure, but the bad things that the enemy has are going to lead to destruction. And God is saying to you today, I'm giving you an invitation back to my heart. I'm going to make a way and reject. You got to reject the compromise. So we're going to live from a new identity, we're going to reject compromise, and then the last thing we're going to do is we are going to embrace consistency. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner. For 3 years straight, fruits, grains, and vegetables. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner. What are you having today? Cucumber. What's for lunch? Celery. What's for dinner? Tomatoes. What's for breakfast? Oatmeal. What's for lunch? Blueberries. What's for dinner? It's just like over and over and over and over and over and over again. Sometimes in our lives, we look for a shortcut to success when we miss the reality of how the monotony of life contributes to a life that honors and pleases God. So much of the life of integrity is work. It's hard work to have a great marriage. It's hard work to honor God with your finances. It's hard work to work behind the scenes when nobody is watching and your boss doesn't really even care what you're doing, but you're faithful when nobody is watching. It's hard work. But we have a statement in family ministry here at South Bay. We say consistency plus duration equals impact. Consistency of character plus duration equals impact. When Stacy and I first got married, we had these two dogs, Sydney and Hannah. They should have been named Tenacious. They were dogs who were demon-possessed, I thought, at times. They would ruin carpet. They would do the dog derby around our living room and destroy lamps. And I mean, they were really, really bad. They would jump on doors when people would come through the front door. One time I came in the front door, they jumped on the door, broke my glasses. One time I was taking a nap and I'd set my glasses down on the end table. They put a plan together. They took my glasses when I woke up. They were having plastic lunch. I mean, they were doing everything that they could to destroy my life. And every once in a while I'd take them into public, and when we get in public, I'd try to get them to do what was right. And they wouldn't. I'm like, I'm your owner. Do what I say. Sit, fetch. And they didn't do it. They'd jump on other people too. I'm like, do you not listen to your master? Why didn't they do it? Because they weren't trained consistently. When they weren't in public, there was no consistency of training. Your character, when nobody is watching, at 5:30, 6 a.m. on Monday, Tuesday morning, your character at 10 a.m. on Wednesday night, or 10 p.m. on Wednesday night, your character in the office when nobody else is around, that consistency of character to do the right thing when nobody is watching is what leads to a lifetime of integrity. And it starts with a resolve inside of our hearts that I am going to be consistent with my commitments, and I'm going to stick with it, and I'm going to stay there as long as it takes. I'm going to fight for what matters most, and I'm going to do it as long as it takes. You want a great marriage? I know, you know, a diamond ring's great, right? You know, every kiss begins with K, right? I mean, that's awesome. Get her a diamond ring. But you really want a great marriage? Honor her. Serve at home. Take her out on dates every week. It works out for your good, too. Other things happen afterwards. I'm telling you, though, you want a great marriage? Be consistent. You want your kids to grow up and walk with Jesus? Be consistent. I know a car for Sweet 16 is awesome. BMW is great. Tesla's better. Get her one of those. She'll like you for a moment, but you really want her to respect your character. Be home on time. And date her when she's 3 years old. Get on the ground and play Legos with them when nobody else is watching. It's that consistency. It's the stuff nobody sees that results. It's the little things that nobody sees that results in the great things everybody wants. Our culture is so indoctrinated with new, with fast, with productive, with get ahead, when in reality, the things that honor God are so small. It's the little things. It's faithfulness when nobody is watching. As long as it takes, we're going to stay in there and embrace consistency. What do you need to embrace consistency in your life? Maybe it's physical fitness. Maybe it's financial. Maybe it's with what you put in front of your eyes on your phone. Maybe it's with the movies that you watch. Maybe it's with dating your spouse. Maybe it's making a commitment to stay single until God brings you somebody instead of dating everybody who you can get with. Maybe it's shifting your mindset to realize that God is your judge and you're going to do the things when nobody is watching to honor him with your life. Maybe it's joining a life group. I'm leading a life group. This is one of my privileges as a pastor. I get to promote my life group from the stage. It's called Alpha. You can sign up for it. It's in the booklets. You can put it on your connection card today and embrace consistency in life groups. Some Alpha folks over there. We are going to resolve in our hearts today to live from our true identity. We're going to reject compromise and we're going to embrace consistency on Monday morning at 8 a.m. And the accumulation is going to be in our lives a consistency of character in every context. A life of integrity. Where does it come from? It flows. Are you guys awake? I'm almost done. A life of integrity. Where does it come from? Your heart. It flows from resolve in your heart. Your life will be over one day. You know that, right? One day it's done. And when you stand at the end, you'll stand before God. And then there will be some people that stand at your graveside. And they're going to say some stuff about you. What is it that you want said about you at your funeral? And let's resolve today to become the kind of people that move us towards the place and the life that God has created us to live. Now, one last thing before I'm done. If you're like me, when I hear a message like this, I'm a little bit convicted in my heart because I see the disparity and I know that at times I'm not consistent in every single context. You know what's beautiful about the heart of God is that God looked down and he saw the human race and he saw our inconsistency and he sent warning after warning after warning. He even sent the Babylonians across the desert to get his people to wake up. And finally, there was a moment where God said, this time, I'm going to go down. I'm going to send my son to the people that I love so dearly. And instead of them going into captivity, I'm going to make a way that they can be free. And at the end of it all, I'm going to live among them. He said, I'm going to send my son. He'll walk perfectly. He'll never make a mistake. He'll never lack integrity in any context. Consistency of character in every single context. And at the end of it, he'll be placed onto a cross for the sins of the world. And he will die the death that every one of them should have died. He'll take their place. And he'll make a way, and he will conquer the grave victoriously, and he will provide hope, and he'll give my spirit to those who will come and receive me. I'll give new life. I'll give grace. I'll give strength. So now they don't have to live for identity. They get to live from identity. That when they put their faith and their trust in me, I'll change their identity and I'll give them everything that they need to live with integrity. And some of us today, we got some skeletons in the closet. We got some things in our past that we feel really shameful about. But what God wants to say to you today is that He has created you to know Him. And you can't live with integrity without Him. You need His power. You need His grace. You need His hand upon your life, sir. Ma'am, you can't do this without Jesus. And He's inviting you today to receive His power, to receive His grace, no matter what your past is, so that today can be the day for you that you resolve in your heart to become a man and a woman of integrity. That's who you are. If you have the hand of the God of the universe upon you, you are a man, you are a woman of integrity, and He's going to give you everything that you need to live for Him, to live unto Him. Jesus, thank you today that because of the grave that could not hold you down, and because of the cross that you conquered, that you made a way so that broken people like us can come and receive you into our lives. We today are blown away by the scandal of this grace and the mercy of God, who is our judge, that not only are you a just judge, but you are a merciful judge. You are so good, so worthy of honor, and so worthy of our lives. And I pray today that today would be a defining moment. Today would be a defining moment for some dad here. He's going to fight for his children. Today would be a defining moment for some young gal in our church. That today she's going to stop trying to get her validity from anybody who'll go to bed with her. And she's going to let her identity come from you. I believe that today. Today's going to be a defining moment for some men who've been cheating around on their spouse, who've been looking at porn on the internet, and they're going to say today, I'm a man of purity. I'm a man of integrity. I'm going to fight for what matters most. Jesus, thank you that your grace calls us deeper and that you invite us, you clean the slate, and then you give us power to live as you've called us to live. Help us hunger and thirst for righteousness. Help us long to be like you, to become your children who live the life that you've created us to live. Jesus, we love you and we praise you, and we pray all of these things in your name. Amen. Will you stand with me as we sing to God?